Welcome to another episode of Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. I started this show to talk about all of the interesting, complex, paradoxical, and sometimes uncomfortable aspects of the human experience. If you get anything from this show, the greatest compliment you could give me is to share this show with somebody that you think the message may resonate with, or to head to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Additionally, if you want to interact with me, you can follow me at @RickAlexander_ on Instagram. Without further ado, on to the show. Probably heard it before. The concept is referred to often in writing as kill your darlings. So it's kind of hard to understand where the concept originated because it's been attributed to a ton of writers, Oscar Wilde, Faulkner, G.K. Chesterton. And anybody that writes a book about writing, I think I've seen it in there like 5 or 6 different times. So this is a concept that at least writers are extremely familiar with. Today, what I'd like to do is talk about this concept as far as it applies to the creating process, and then see if we can draw some parallels to our own lives and the way that we're going about them. So I want to use a quote from Stephen King. He wrote a book called On Writing, which if you are interested in being a writer, I think that is probably the best book I've ever read on writing, though I would say Stephen Pressfield's War of Art and The Artist's Journey are both kind of up there as well. But Stephen King said, kill your darlings, even when it breaks your egocentric little scribbler's heart, kill your darlings. So the idea is this, the rewriting process, and this has taken me a long time to learn, is, you would say, just as important, perhaps more important, but at least as important as the writing process in and of itself. And I'm finding the rewriting process is actually pretty fun as well, because you've already got a lot of the framework and the guts are in there. And now it's a matter of combing through the manuscript, looking for redundancies, looking for places where you wander off the point or the path. And that's the idea behind kill your darlings. And I've never understood what it really meant until this final sort of read through I'm doing of the revised edition of Ambitious Heroes and Heartache, because there are concepts that as a writer you'll come up with. And when you come up with a concept, it's not as simple as saying, oh, I have a good idea. It's something like taking the contents of your soul and making them manifest in the world. And so when you do that properly, because it's so hard to actually do, you tend to want to hold on to them. The problem is when you go back and you look at your work, oftentimes you have to ask yourself, oh, did this concept I wrote on a, you know, Tuesday afternoon last year, does it actually work for the book? And so oftentimes I kind of have a little darling graveyard in my Google Docs where I pull out all of these, like full chapters actually in this book, but I pull out these sections and I put them in there because it helps me to, well, I have them, so I can go back to them. And because sometimes they are good writing, they just don't work for the point. And so when you think about writing a book, you're actually writing about a concept. And so every book can be distilled down to what is the concept that it's trying to tell you. And if you actually understood the concept, you wouldn't have to read the book. But the idea is that the author will break down this concept from as many different angles or as many ways. He'll make it applicable. He'll make it digestible for the reader. And so that's what a book is, obviously. That's what it's about. And so when you're combing through this process, you've got to be willing to part with all of the parts that are not explaining that concept how you want them to, which is what the point of the book is. And that's hard because oftentimes what you wrote is you are really happy with. Again, because it is so hard to take the things that are inside of you and make them digestible and applicable for a reader. I heard on a podcast that when Jordan Peterson wrote his book 12 or Maps of Meaning, which was his first book, which he taught a university course on, which is what a lot of professors do, he spent 12 years writing that book. And the last, you know, few years of it was going through line by line, and every single line in that book had to prove to him why he shouldn't kill it, why he shouldn't take it away. And so by taking this really strict process to our creative work, we're able to mine it for the gold. We're able to part with what is going to take the reader off of the path. Now, if you're not a writer, I'd love for you to just think about your life. I'd like you to think about the different parts of your life, the sub-personalities that you subscribe to, the coping mechanisms that you have. When I got out of the military, I went to this communication school for a very short time. I realized instantly that it was not for me. But in the second week that I was there, I came in on Tuesday, the second day of the second week, and the dean was kind of like grilling everybody for being late. Well, I'd come in the first 3 days and the instructor hadn't showed up for like 10 or 15 minutes. So my instant reaction is, well, I'm not going to come for 10 or 15 minutes. I'm not just going to come here and sit here, right? So I started coming late too. And then on week two, she comes in and she pulls us all in and is kind of like berating us essentially for coming in late. Well, in the military, anger is an acceptable emotion. Anybody actually that has trouble expressing their emotions or is in a place where emotions are not acceptable to express, you understand how accessible anger is and how easy it is to access. And so how easy it is to access. And so I kind of learned to stabilize myself when I was in difficult situations by pulling anger out of the hat. It was like kind of my go-to. And so as she sat there, I sat there for about 5 minutes, and then I stood up and I just gave her anger back. I was like, you know, I won't go through my full monologue, but I gave her a full monologue on why she is incorrect in what she is saying. And she stopped talking, so it worked. I felt centered, so it worked. And I looked around at my classmates' faces, and I realized in that moment, like, I'm in a new world. I'm in a new environment. Some of my classmates almost seemed horrified by the idea that such aggression would even be in their midst, and I was not even a tenth on the aggression scale. Now, why am I telling you this? There are parts of ourselves that we love, that we hold on to, that we grip tightly, but we have to ask ourselves, are those in service to where we're going, to the ultimate aim of our lives, to who we really want to be? You know, it can be helpful to sit down and ask yourself who you do want to be in this life, right? And then you can architect that person, right? Essentially, I mean, it's not quite that simple, obviously, because you're not a machine that you can do whatever you want with, but it does help to create an aim that gives structure to how you want to show up in the world, how you want to be perceived when you go into meetings, how do you want people to think about you. And I find that if you can just think about that for short periods of time, you realize that you have far more autonomy over yourself and over your life than most stop to appreciate or care to admit. And so most of us are just going through the motions, is what I'm saying. We don't really stop to think about what the motion should be based on what we actually want for our lives. And so I would love for you to think about your aim. Think about the way that you want to be perceived in this life. And now set that aside, bracket that thinking and set it aside for a minute. And now think about all of the parts of yourself that you love, that have worked for you, that have served you, that have kept you safe, that have protected you, but that might not get you where you ultimately want to be. Different parts of our ego show up in this vein quite often. For example, I would say in romantic interests, we tend to figure out ways to protect ourselves, right? And so we erect walls around our hearts, things of that nature. And the problem with erecting walls is that not only do you keep people out, but you keep you in, right? And so you create this situation where you can't connect with people in an authentic level. And that's, you know, I would say that is the umbrella problem with coping mechanisms anyway, right? It's like you have all these places, these ways of coping with a really tough world as a really fragile creature. And we never want to let those go, right? Because they are the thing that keep us the most safe. But perhaps the life that you're trying to build, the people that you want to influence in your life, perhaps there are parts of yourself that you've got to kill, might be an aggressive word, but that you've got to let go. And so this idea of killing your darlings is really about dispensing with the pieces in service of the whole, right? And you deserve the whole. Like, the whole you deserves to show up in the world, however it is that you feel called to show up. I think I'm going through this right now in many ways because there are parts of myself that I really love. Like, I really love to swear, for example. But I think maybe where I'm going in life and what I'm trying to do and the way that I'm trying to meet people, that swearing might not work because it might be a bit too aggressive, or like it might just be unbecoming, or it might just like push people to their heels. I don't know, right? So there's all these different aspects of ourselves though. And you early like Lionheart Radio listeners that have listened to me like 400 episodes ago, like, I mean, I almost half of the monologue was me swearing, right? This is an integral part of my being because I found that it was acceptable for the first 12 years of my life in the special forces career. And so I've strengthened that part of me, and it's become habitual, and I love it, right? Really, I do. I there's some part of my, it's like myself. So of course I love it. But the thing to understand is that we have to be willing to dispense with the parts of ourselves that we love, that are keeping us centered at the cost of keeping us where we ultimately want to be. And so in the morning coffee vein, you know, I haven't done it lately, but I like to ask questions. I like to ask you questions. So when you shut this podcast off, you've got something to ruminate on and to think about. And so my question for you is, what are your darlings? Remember at the beginning, we bracketed off our thought process, and there's some picture of yourself. We might call this your ideal self. Something I teach in my Clarity Academy curriculum is how to develop this. So spend some time and develop this, because you've got to have this. You've got to know where you're going, right? Otherwise, you're always lost because you don't know where you are. It's only in relation to where we're going that we know where we are. That's like a navigational concept, right? In Dead Reckoning, when you want to figure out where you are in the world, you've got to find something to be in relation to. And so our aim in life creates what we're in relation to. So think about that. Now, think about the parts of yourselves, the parts of your character that are going to keep you from becoming that person, right? Maybe it's pride, right? Maybe what you need is a bit more humility to meet the world in a more open and vulnerable place, because you know as long as you protect your inner state and your heart and your soul, you're never going to be able to flower into the world in a way that is the way that you're actually looking for. And so what are those parts of yourselves? Now, I want to separate those parts of yourselves from judgment. So the reason I like the Kill Your Darlings example is because these are the parts of my writing that I like the most. You know, that's what's to understand about this. And the reason every writer tells you that and giving advice, I think, is because they are the parts that you love the most. They are the parts that keep you centered. They are the parts that keep you safe. It's not about shaming them, right? I don't go back and crap on myself for having written those back in the day, right? I just kind of set them aside, and I'm like, maybe something later, right? Maybe it'll be in a podcast episode, or maybe it'll be in an essay or whatever. I've got my own process. The point here though is maybe right now, the way that you've learned to move through the world isn't going to get you where you ultimately want to be. It's a really good book called What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Can't remember the author right now, but that concept is integral in development work, whether it's spiritual, emotional, or personal development, professional development even. We learn certain things in the world, and they create safety and boundaries around ourselves, and we never want to let them go, because when we learn how to be in a brutal world as a fragile creature, it's something that our brain etches in the back of our mind as in our operating system. And so we want to hold on to it, because we are creatures that are born to survive at a fundamental and biological level. But maybe they won't get you where you're ultimately wanting to go. And maybe it's a process, right? Maybe you don't take a butcher knife to your ideas like I have in my book and just started like pulling them out really fast. But maybe you start opening to this idea that there's somewhere else that you want to go. And so maybe there's something else that you have to do in order to get there. I love you guys. Hope you have an amazing week. We'll talk soon on Morning Coffee.